From KXCI in Tucson, it is time for the classic pick of the week. Volunteer Chris Carey spends his Sundays selecting and researching our classic pick each week, and then he's kind enough to come in and share his findings with us. And this week, he picked a real good one. This is Johnny Cash's from American Recordings. Oh, wait a second. Is the name of the album American Recordings?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
I think I always thought it was like self-titled and that was the label, but no, that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, he ended up doing...
Because it's on Def Jam, right?
Yeah, he ended up doing like 4 or 5 American Recordings.
Okay.
Well, it was on American Recordings. Rick Rubin started this label. He was a co-founder of Def Jam, and then he did American Recordings outside of Def Jam. But him and Russell Simmons started Def Jam, and then he did this.
Ah, very good. Sorry, I'm galloping ahead of the mix here.
That's okay.
I'm just excited about this one. I can't believe that it's 25 years old. It came out in 1994.
Yeah, it doesn't feel 25 years old to me either. And what's crazy about this album, well, yeah, even the name of the album, American Recordings, I was trying to think, I don't know if I know of any other album named after the label it's on.
Yeah,
but
interesting.
So this was Johnny Cash's 81st album.
Holy crow.
And I was trying to figure out if there was anybody else that even had in the ballpark as many recordings as Johnny Cash. And I think my best guess is John Lee Hooker. John Lee Hooker has a lot of records.
And what's so funny about it, yeah, 81st album, but in some ways, it's the first album in this latter chapter of who he was towards the end of his recording
career.
Yeah,
it's kind of his last chapter in recording, and you might even argue his second most influential, you know, maybe after the late 60s. I mean...
Yeah. Oh, it was a huge deal.
Yeah, so it was recorded, 25 years ago this month. Johnny Cash, of course, he became an icon in the late 60s, but specifically after releasing Folsom Prison Blues and Johnny Cash at San Quentin, which are still probably his most, you know, renowned albums. Although this is up there with some of his best recordings. The funny thing was he was such an icon, but in the 70s and 80s, he kind of started losing traction. He wasn't selling that many records, and his long-term label, Columbia, dropped him in 1986. And he'd been on Columbia since the 1950s, and so it was really, you know, I'm sure it was rough for him to be dropped by that label.
Oh, I'm sure. I feel like a lot of artists of around his age group at that time were kind of losing their way, because it seems like it was a transitional time in the record industry, and a lot of artists were sort of pivoting towards whatever they thought was working at the moment, and then they kind of ended up sort of losing their identity a little bit. I feel like he goes into that category as well.
And he might have, and I think, you know, part of it too is during the 70s and 80s, he was fighting a lot with different producers. He had various different producers who wanted to do this, that, and the other, and he didn't get along with them, and he wasn't being able to really express himself, I think, as much as he would like to have. And so after he was dropped by Columbia, he signed a really brief deal with Mercury Records and released some sort of kind of compilation with duets and then a Christmas album, and that kind of went away. But at the same time as that was going on, there was a cover record put out by Mark Riley of The Fall and John Langford of the Mekons called Till Things Are Brighter. And it wasn't a huge seller, but this was kind of the first time when this, you know, very old, you know, he'd been around since the 50s country guy was really getting a lot of prop as he was losing traction with major labels. All these independent labels and independent smaller bands were really taking notice of what he did in a new way. And so that record, I think, kind of really introduced the kind of post-punk indie world to Johnny Cash in a different way.
So the Mekons covered a Johnny Cash song?
Well,
is that what you were
saying? John Langford of the Mekons, okay. And Mark Riley, they did a covers record. There was a bunch of different artists on it.
Oh, and it was a Cash covers record.
Yeah, it was all.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was called Till Things Are Brighter. It came out in 92, I believe. And it was that record, I still think it's kind of hard to find. If you can find a first pressing of it, I think it probably would be worth more than your average first pressing record from 92. Anyway, after that, I mean, basically Rick Rubin kind of took notice of him, and he had just started American Recordings, and he approached Johnny Cash and wanted to do a stripped down record with him. And I mean, it's kind of interesting about Rick Rubin. And, you know, he's kind of one of these guys that people love or hate, but he's one of these superstar producers slash record executives. He was with CBS Recordings a long time, and then he co-founded Def Jam with Russell Simmons, and he along with Russell Simmons really helped popularize, you know, hip hop in the U.S. I mean, they worked with Run DMC and the Beastie Boys and Public Enemy and LL Cool J. I mean, they worked with all these huge, you know, founding hip hop acts. And then he worked with all these huge pop and metal acts. He worked with AC/DC and Aerosmith at the drive-in, Eminem, Frank Ocean, Weezer, Black Keys. I mean, he's worked with everybody basically. And he's one of these, I think he's one of these, I mean, I am not a producer engineer in any stretch, but there seems to be the producers that are really about the equipment and the tweaking in the studio. And then there's the producers that are less about the tweaking and the
more
equipment.
More about the artist.
And they're more about the artist and what the sound should be like. And they aren't, you know, heavy engineers. And I think he's a little bit more in that category. And I think, you know, the genius of what he did with this record was he was like, you know, Johnny Cash's voice is so amazing. And any song he sings, he owns, is that he doesn't need any much production. And so this whole album, all but two songs on this whole album were recorded in Rick Rubin's L.A. living room and Johnny Cash's living room in Tennessee, in northern Tennessee, in a rural town. And so, and then there were two songs that were recorded in the Viper Room in L.A., which I think is kind of funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's so there's the two live tracks on this album, you know, were recorded in the Viper Room at the time, which was owned by Johnny.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure Mr. Depp was all right.
I'm
with
sure
that.
Johnny Depp was there. Yeah. So, but yeah, so that was just, it was just Johnny Cash and a guitar. And it's also interesting, too. I mean, Johnny Cash always did a lot. He wrote a lot, but he also did a lot of covers. And some of the covers on this album you would kind of expect, like he covers Kris Kristofferson, and he's recorded with Kris Kristofferson and been good friends with him. But he also did a Leonard Cohen cover, a Tom Waits cover, a Loudon Wainwright cover, and a Glenn Danzig cover, which is...
Glenn Danzig is not one I would imagine he self-selected.
Well, I mean, and Rick Rubin worked a lot with Danzig, and I think he knew Danzig's catalog and thought that this would be a good song for him. And what's interesting, this is kind of like, it reminds me, this song is kind of like David Bowie's China Girl, and that somebody else recorded it before he did, or All the Young Dudes, you know. So he recorded it in 94, and then I don't think it showed up on a Danzig record until 99. That is quite different. Yeah. but the lyrics are good, and I think that, you know, it goes to show, you know, at least 90% of the time, if it's a really well-written song, I think it can kind of work in almost any genre. But so anyway, critically, this album, everybody loved it from the get-go. It finished on the top list of virtually every, you know, reviewing institution in the world. And it ended up winning a Grammy for the Best Contemporary Folk Album in 95. It didn't sell great. It didn't sell bad, but it wasn't like a platinum record by any stretch. It only sold, I think, 250,000 copies in the U.S. and 50,000 in the U.K. That being said, it's still a hugely influential record, and everybody that I know knows the record,
yeah,
owns it.
And you know, something that's interesting about this that just occurred to me, and I figured it out when I'm sitting here looking at these release dates. I have a huge association between this record and the death of Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, it's about
and
the same
that makes
time.
Sense. It was and this was wildly popular in Seattle. Like every bar you would go into would be playing this, and I think, and almost in some ways, I think people were finding it comforting. Like Johnny Cash is still with us, and he's doing new and impressive work.
Well, and Johnny Cash's record, I mean, it is, you know, it's got, you know, a lot of his later works particularly have a lot of power to them. I mean, they're you know, and I think his own, you know, he's, I think, always wrestling with his own, you know, sin and redemption and his spiritual beliefs. And because of that, I think, you know, it obviously comes out a lot in his music, and both directly and indirectly. And what's funny, too, is I didn't know this, but on the cover of this album, which I've always loved this picture of him.
His doggies.
He's got two dogs, and they're named, there's a black dog and a white dog, and they're named Sin and Redemption.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or they,
okay.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not around anymore, but you know, it was 25 years ago. This album, yeah, it really marks Johnny Cash's resurgence. I mean, and up until then, he... nobody, you know, he was kind of a has-been, you know, and a lot of people, you know, he hadn't.
And
really,
now that sounds like a sacrilegious thing to
it
say.
It does,
but it's important to remember what was going on back then.
Yeah, by the early 90s, you know, he hadn't done anything that was significant artistically since, the early Highwayman stuff in the early 70s. Yeah. So, and it blossomed. I mean, and there were five American recordings. The last one was released after he died.
Yeah. Well, and did he work exclusively with Rick Rubin for the rest of his career?
I don't think on everything he released. There was some other stuff that was released that weren't American recordings, but he did
but
like
at
five
least
or six
the vast
of these.
Majority of the time for the balance of his career, he was working with Rick Rubin.
Or his late career, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, it is crazy that this guy, I still want to go back and see if I've, the only person I can think of that released 100 recordings, near 100 recordings was probably John Lee Hooker.
Yeah.
Maybe B.B. King. I mean, it's the only other people that are going to compete with him would be other long-term blues or country people. Like Merle Haggard's got a lot of records, but I don't know if he's got this many.
We're discussing Johnny Cash's American Recordings release. Came out on April 26th in 1994, 25 years ago. It is our classic pick of the week, support for which is brought to you by Downtown's Good Oak Bar, purveyors of small batch whiskeys and mezcals and all Arizona Beer Board and local foods-based pub fare from the Diablo Burger Kitchen, located at 316 East Congress and online at goodoakbar.com. So we're going to start out with the Danzig cover.
13.
Anything else you would like to add?
Yeah, I mean, I love this this album or this song on this album. It might be, if it's not my favorite on the album, it's one of my favorites. And a little known fact is my wife used to perform a cover of this song as well.
Oh, really?
She did.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would like to hear that.
Yeah, I can't remember what album it was on, but I'll
figure
it out.
Oh, but she did record it?
I think
oh,
so.
Oh, I'm going to find that.
Yeah.
I'm going to find that. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah, but yeah, she used to sing it all the time.
Thanks, Chris.